So we're going to start, and I also want to say, this isn't about individuals per se. It's not about, I'm going to talk about a quote from Donald Trump, but this is not designed to be a attack on Trumpism in general, but rather an attack on an action by the president, because I don't care who you voted for, I don't care why you voted, and it's not an attack on you if you voted for Trump. That's not the point. And even if you did vote for Trump, you're probably going to agree with me, I would hope, that this particular action was pretty repugnant, even if you're a supporter. So here's a quote from a series of tweets. After consultation with my generals and military experts, please be advised that the United States government will not accept or allow transgender individuals to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military. Our military must be focused on decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgender in the military would entail. Thank you. I don't know why he puts thank you at the end, as though somehow that sugarcoats it all. And then another example was last year in North Carolina, where the state passed a law that required people using bathrooms in government buildings to use the bathroom for the sex identified on their birth certificate. It was repealed in part this year, but portions of that law that prevent cities from passing laws protecting the LGBT community still remain in place. Other states like Texas and Tennessee came very close to passing similar laws, but did not. Now, these two examples should be sufficient to show you that there are at least some politicians who have declared war on transgender people. They're an easy target in their minds, easy way to get your ultra-conservative supporters to continue to support you, to throw a little red meat to the voters, as it were. It also indicates that there is a war on a small group of vulnerable people. And if you don't think that's happening, perhaps by the end of this sermon, you will change your mind. We're going to start with Donald Trump. Those series of tweets, and I speak from someone who has served in the military for 20 years, first of all, it shows how little compassion a human being can actually have. Even if you are a supporter of his, I hope you can see that attacks on people via tweets, on people who are now serving in the military, something I might add that Donald Trump never did because he had a bone spur in his foot. If you believe that, I have land to sell you in a swamp. His attacks are unconscionable, to put it bluntly. First, in his tweet, he claims to have consulted with his generals. Now, I will tell you, in the military world, if you're talking about your military leaders and you only say generals, you're leaving the Navy out. The admirals might be just slightly miffed that you didn't talk to them. Admirals don't call themselves generals, which shows you just his blatant ignorance of the military in so many different ways. It's also bizarre that he would even say he consulted with them, because the Joint Chiefs of Staff were caught unaware by this bizarre series of tweets. The charge of tremendous medical costs is essentially another of his famous fabrications, since the costs have been estimated to be no more than 1/10 of what we spend to treat erectile dysfunction in the military. So if you're really out to save money, those are the people you need to kick out. Another example of incredible medical costs, not to mention, we'll pick on the women now, not to mention deployability, is pregnancy. So we also need to kick all the women out, because pregnancy isn't expensive, and the mother therefore cannot deploy. If a woman is pregnant, she is taken off deployment status. I know this because that was my job in the Air Force. And I even literally know of an example of a woman who bragged about how she kept getting pregnant so she didn't have to deploy. Terrible reason. I know of another woman who got pregnant to avoid getting in trouble for being overweight, because if you're pregnant, you don't get put on the weight management program. and these are two examples I know of, very, very rare. It's not a trend. But any good thing can be abused. So if we say, if we have someone in the military and they decide they're transgender and they want to undergo sexual reassignment surgery, that is a medical cost that we carry as a nation to help those who are willing to serve in the military. And this notion that this is insane medical burden on us to have transgender people serve in the military is just nonsense. But it probably plays quite well to the ultra-conservative supporters of Donald Trump, who think that, frankly, this is all an abomination to God anyway, and anything we can do to slip closer to a theocracy is a good thing, and yay for President Trump, because the hate flows freely. So, yeah, as I said, it just keeps getting better and better today because I'm not pulling any punches. I am truly disgusted that someone in a position of leadership could be so callous, so hateful, so short-sighted, so disrespectful of people who serve in the military as Donald Trump, who is the commander-in-chief and attacks the very people he's supposed to be watching out for. Disgraceful, utterly disgraceful. As for North Carolina, what could be more bizarre than creating a law that will never be enforced? Are you seriously going to have bathroom monitors in government buildings checking birth certificates? But of course, this plays great to those who don't like transgender people. It's an idiotic law, but boy, it gets the voters out. Because never mind all the real problems that we have in this country, there's obviously an epidemic of transgender people using our government bathrooms and causing insane disruptions. Except there aren't, but it sure sounds good when you're trying to rile up the voters. So that's the end of the political side of the discussion. This is what got me upset and said it's time to address this. But now we're going to move away from the politicians because their motivations can be pretty sad, really. But let's talk about us and how we feel, each as individuals, as Unitarian Universalists, as a congregation, because we have a group of people under attack right now, viciously, callously under attack right now. So I want to talk about what it means to be transgender as best as I can understand it, because if you haven't lived it, you're never going to be fully empathetic. I want each of us to look closely at the issue and how we feel, each one of us. Are we willing to stand with a marginalized group of people outside of what many people call normal, or do we just shrug and go on with our lives? So the first thing I want to do is a little mental exercise. I would like each one of you to try to imagine something that may be completely foreign to you. Try to imagine that if you are male, that every time you look in the mirror, you hate what you see, and you want to be a woman. You should be a woman. That's what your mind is telling you. That's how you feel. That's how you think. And conversely, women, imagine looking in the mirror and feeling that you should be male and that you hate yourself. You hate what you see, and you wish you could change, that your brain, your heart, your soul tells you you're born in the wrong body. Can you try to imagine what that would be like? It's hard if you've never wrestled with it, and maybe you can't get there. But take it as a given that that is how some people feel, even if it's not you. Really imagine every day hating the body you're in because it's the wrong body. And why did the universe do this to me? Or why did God do this to me? Now add to this, even though you're in this situation that seems insurmountably awful, through modern medicine, we now have the ability to alter the body to a huge degree. You're not going to be able to change the DNA, which is one of those arguments that the haters like to use. Your DNA is still the same. So what? We can, through modern medicine, through surgery, go a great distance towards helping someone to have the body they think they should have. Both through hormone treatments and through surgery, a man can, to at least the outward appearance, become a woman, and a woman can become a man and live in a body that they're more at home in. Now, if you've never had this desire, that may just seem totally foreign. And it may even cause shudders to think about changing your body that way. But don't think about it how you feel. Try to put yourself in the shoes of someone that would be an incredible blessing. Just a wonderful way to overcome this horrible obstacle in your life, that you can't be at home in the body you have, and you really think you would be at home if you could change your body. And then ask yourself this: we can do this, people do this. What about your reaction to people who are going to make this change? How would you, as a friend or a family member or a congregational member, react to somebody else who notified you, "I'm going to undergo this change. I've been dealing with this my whole life. I can't stand it anymore. And through before your very eyes, I'm going to change day by day, first through hormone replacement, and then through surgery, and I'm going to go from man to woman or woman to man. Can you accept me when I do that? Can you love me the same? Or are you going to look at me as a freak?" And we know, as a group, the right answer, but what I'm asking is, deep down inside, how do you feel individually? Is there discomfort? And if there is, why? Let me tell you some other things. For someone to undergo sexual reassignment surgery, or even if they don't do the surgery, if they simply do hormone replacement, dress differently, take on a new name and a new persona, imagine all the negative feedback you're going to get in our society. First of all, how's my immediate family going to react? Will they disown me? That happens a great deal. What about my friends? Will they stop being my friends? What about my church? Will they kick me out? Many churches would. What about my job? Can I keep my job? And even if technically I keep it, am I going to be harassed and ridiculed through the process? These are issues that face a lot more people than I thought in our country. Estimates right now are 1.4 million people are transgender. That's 0.5% of our population. If you have a room filled with 200 people, statistically, one of them will be transgender. That's not a small number. 1 out of 200, that's a significant number of people in this country. In Tennessee, estimates are 31,000 transgender people. As I said, I was surprised the number was that large. 1.4 million people have been targeted by the President of the United States as unfit to serve from a man who avoided serving because he had a bone spur on his foot. That says it all in 2017. That's where we've come as a nation. Now, I cannot speak to this from a personal perspective, and so I'm not going to pretend that I fully relate. I've always been comfortable being male, but I can try really hard to imagine what it would be like to hate being male and to want to be female and to know that that option's out there. But my goodness, the resistance I'm going to get, the cost I will have to pay, both financially and socially, and some risk too. Any surgery is risky. Any kind of change is risky from a medical perspective. Would I do that if I felt trapped in my body? And could I count on the support of my friends, family, and congregation? Now, I am never going to be able to fully relate, but I can oppose those who act as bullies for political gain to attack this group of people. And I will also tell you that in my ministry, we have one woman in our church who is a trans woman, but no one knew it. She told me one day when I was at the hospital visiting her family because her father had had a stroke. And we were sitting down talking, and she just casually mentioned, "Well, Doug, you know I'm a trans woman, right?" I had no idea. She had made the transition so well, I don't think there was a soul in our church who knew. But the next thing she said to me was telling, "Please don't share this with anyone in the church, because I don't know how they'll react." And I didn't even share it with Jancy. I didn't tell anyone for well over 2 years until I gave this sermon. And then, during our talk back, she told everyone in the congregation. She finally felt safe enough to share that story. So I have been able to hear some things from her about how tough it was and some of the things she went through. And it was not an easy life for her for many reasons. And the one thing I can say is at least her parents stuck with her through this, and they did not reject her. But it was a tough thing. And one of the things she said was, "People can't deal with it. I went to another state for the transition. I couldn't do it around here." Not in Shelbyville, which is where she lives. And she said, even at that, when I got a job in North Carolina and was transitioning, I was harassed endlessly, mocked, ridiculed, and harassed. Now, if this topic makes you uncomfortable, that doesn't mean you're a bad person or you're not progressive enough or not open enough. It is alien to a lot of people. So I want to talk about that a little bit. You know, we're not all exactly in the same place in our understanding and our openness and our acceptance. You know, we're not all perfect, and we don't all see things exactly the same, and we don't have the same life experience. So, you know, people sitting there right now listening are going, "Well, obviously I need to be fully accepting, and yet there's something in me that I'm wrestling with. I'm not entirely comfortable." That's okay. We're going to talk about it, and you're free to be where you are, okay? I'm not here to tell you you're bad if you don't believe X, Y, and Z. I'm trying to give you some perspective to help you as you think about this issue. So here's some common arguments against the transgender population. First of all, the easiest one to dismiss because it's just name-calling is, these people are just sexual perverts. Now, it's hardly worth discussing. If you hate your body because you think it should be other, if you look in the mirror, if I look in the mirror and I keep telling myself I should be a woman, I don't know why I have this male body, where does the sexual perversion come in that? This is about me being what my brain is trying to tell me I should be. That's a hard thing to have to deal with. I don't fully understand it, but I can accept that this happens and that people wrestle with this. And sexual perversion isn't even in the equation. That's simply the charge of someone who doesn't know what they're talking about, to be blunt. Number two, a little more insidious, a little more harmful in its intent to name call, perhaps. Why should, and this actually happened to me, I was interviewed many years ago, early on in my ministry, by someone from MTSU who was doing a documentary on transgender people. And she came out and interviewed me. She was trying to get different church perspectives. I was actually the only minister who would talk to her from the entire spectrum. And after I posted about this on Facebook, a recently added friend of mine from high school that I hadn't seen in forever pipes up with, "Why should we celebrate people mutilating their bodies?" And I realized he was going to be a troll. It didn't take long for me to unfriend him. First of all, not all trans people even have surgery. So if you think they do, they don't. Plenty do not. Some just have hormone treatments. But for those who do have surgery, So what? I am firmly of the opinion that people can do with their bodies as they please. There's lots of things we do that somebody else could say, you're mutilating your body. For instance, body piercings. All you women with pierced ears, you're mutilating your body. You're driving a piece of metal through your body and putting a hole in it. How can you mutilate your body like that? Or tattoos. I mean, that's not only piercing your skin with a million needles and ink and staining your body. You know, if that's not mutilating your body, what is? But we don't get bent out of shape about those things. But if somebody decides to change their body in a way that takes them from being at least as much as possible from male to female or female to male, suddenly that's an objectionable form of mutilation, at least to some people. Actually, I would encourage you, if you're not too squeamish, because some sites are quite graphic, Google sexual reassignment surgery. Check it out online. There are medical pages and pages of information of all the stuff they do that's involved in the surgery. And it's quite complicated. It's amazingly intricate and astonishing what is done to make a man a woman or a woman a man physically. And it's, you know, not to be too grandiose about it, it's a miracle of modern science that we can do these things. And to reduce that to mutilation is an insult, both to the people having it done and to the doctors performing it. It's not mutilation. It's an attempt to help people live full lives when they're wrestling with an incredible difficulty in their life. Another objection is, well, now we have all these weird pronouns, and there are a lot of different pronouns being proposed, and I'm not even sure I'm saying them all right, but je or ge or ge, instead of saying he or she, something that is neutral and doesn't designate male or female. And from a linguistic perspective, because I am an English major amongst other things, it does open up some interesting discussions. And some trans people have even said we should always use plural pronouns instead of singular. So instead of saying he or she, you always say they, which can get very confusing. If you really mean to identify one person and you're saying they, that will drive some people crazy. Language evolves over time, and language may undoubtedly change for us. Why do we insist on having pronouns that designate male or female? Why is that important? And not in our language, but in other languages, you have feminine or male identifiers for inanimate objects. A chair might be male. Instead of just saying it like we do, many languages have different forms of it, a male it or a female it. So language changes and simplifies, and maybe one day we will just have one pronoun for all people. Maybe he will refer to everyone, or she will refer to everyone, or maybe something else will refer to everyone. If you're a Star Trek fan, as I know some of you are, and you see the shows in the future, everyone's called sir. There is no ma'am anymore, except on Voyager, because Captain Janeway's still like ma'am. But women in general are addressed as sir just as men are, to show that it doesn't matter if you're male or female in the future in Star Trek. Anyway, we shall see. Finally, an example from a conservative speaker, I don't remember his name, it was one of the many videos I watched to try to get a full spectrum of input. And this is one where this guy was speaking at a college and people were coming up and asking questions. And this particular clip was from someone asking questions who couldn't hold her own. She asked questions, but when he countered with something, she just sort of stood there with the deer in the headlights look. So obviously that's the best clip to show. But one thing he says when talking about transgender people, he starts off pretty good. He says, you know, I understand that there's this thing called sexual dysphoria, and you don't think you're the sex your body is. So if you're male, you think you should be female and vice versa. And he even says, that's a real problem for these people. They wrestle with it. I wish them Godspeed in dealing with it. well, that sounds pretty good, doesn't it? You know he's going to stop there, right? Because he's a conservative giving conservative speeches at a university, so he's just going to let that go, right? No, of course not. The next thing he says, because he couldn't leave it on a positive note, was, but don't expect me to pretend that a man is a woman or a woman is a man. So, of course, he brings it back to himself. You are offensive to me because you want me to deny the way you were born. Well, it's not about him. That's the point. It really isn't about you. And no one really cares if you pretend. Just show a little respect for someone who's trying to get through life and was born with something you have acknowledged is a problem they wrestle with. But you can't give them the dignity of calling a trans woman she or a trans man he, because that would cause you to be uncomfortable because now you have to pretend. So get over that. Show some respect. Show some compassion. So how would you react if you knew someone for many, many years and they suddenly revealed they were trans, as I shared the story of the woman in our congregation? How, just pause for a moment and think about that. Look around the congregation. I mean, theoretically, anyone in here could be trans and afraid to tell you because they're afraid of the reaction. Would you have a negative reaction if someone suddenly said, I've been trans for 20 years and I just felt I could finally share it with you? Would it make you think any differently of that person? I can tell you, when this woman told me that she was trans, I was surprised, but it didn't bother me. Over time, I look back, didn't change a thing. It didn't bother me. I don't know why. Maybe because to me that's not an issue of measuring someone's worth or value. I don't know. I hope it wouldn't bother you. Conversely, as I asked you earlier, let's suppose someone in the congregation tells you, I'm going to transition now and I don't want to move to another state. I don't want to have to go start my life over while I transition. I want to stay here with my friends and know that you can support me in that. I hope we all could. I hope it wouldn't be a burden for anyone. The bottom line of all this is that we need to treat people with respect and dignity, love and compassion. If any aspect of human sexuality makes you uncomfortable, can you still allow others to live differently from you? Can you still believe that we have to protect each other from unscrupulous politicians and self-appointed messengers of God? Can we stand with the small group of people, 0.5% of our population, that are currently under attack for something they should not be under attack for? They hadn't done anything wrong. Nothing. They're simply under attack for who they are. That is what the President of the United States is doing right now. We need to stand with these unfortunate people who are being targeted, stand by them and support them, and oppose people, politicians, church leaders, whoever they may be, who attack this group of people for no good reason. What really matters now is not the wide array of sexual expression and identification that we have in the world and that we encounter. What really matters is how we treat each other. How do you treat someone who might be radically different from you? That is the measure of your compassion. That is something worth working on day by day in your personal growth. Your compassion, your care for others. This is the value and ethic of any religion worth practicing. And I think that we can say that within Unitarian Universalism, we do at least try very hard to live up to this. And I hope we can continue to do this and address this issue, because it's timely, it's important, and people's lives are being just messed with right now. People who serve to protect us in the military are being vilified, and it just blows my mind I even have to talk about this. Let us be strong, let us be compassionate, let us be a light in the darkness, and thank you for coming.